Tested is sponsored by Hungry Harvest, offering farm-fresh produce delivered to your door starting at $15. Shop now with code WUNC. Every delivery supports local hunger-solving organizations. Find more at hungryharvest.net.
I'm Leonida Inge. This is Test It from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, the apology. Being unapologetically Black in America means that when white people come forward with an apology, my ears perk up. The big ones, you know, somebody saying, "I'm sorry," for an incredibly racist act, usually make news because they are few and far between. Like back in 1997, when former President Bill Clinton issued a formal apology for the Tuskegee study. The Public Health Service withheld treatment for 40 years from hundreds of Black men who had syphilis.
What was done cannot be undone, but we can end the silence. We can stop turning our heads away. We can look at you in the eye and finally say, on behalf of the American people, what the United States government did was shameful. And I am sorry.
Sometimes the people are apologizing for something in their own past, like last year when we saw a handful of elected officials sort of apologize for wearing blackface when they were younger, like Virginia Governor Ralph Northam.
That photo and the racist and offensive attitudes it represents does not reflect that person I am today or the way that I have conducted myself as a soldier, a doctor, and a public servant. I am deeply sorry.
And Alabama Governor Kay Ivey, who admitted to wearing blackface in a skit when she was a student leader at Auburn University.
I offer my heartfelt apologies for my participation in something from 52 years ago that I find deeply regrettable. I will do all I can going forward to help show the nation that the Alabama of today is a far cry from the Alabama of the 1960s.
Now, was that so hard? I guess not, because just weeks ago, Ivy issued another race-based apology, this time to the, quote, fifth little Black girl. She's the girl who's now an older woman who survived the bombing by the KKK at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham back in 1963. Ivy's letter reads, "For that, they most certainly deserve a sincere, heartfelt apology, an apology that I extend today without hesitation or reservation." But the governor's letter also acknowledged questions about whether the state is legally responsible for an act of violence that happened so long ago. The problem is, Sarah Collins Rudolph, who still lives with shards of glass in her body from that dreadful day, had to ask for the apology. It's been 57 years since that deadly blast, and more than 40 years since the trials convicting the Klansmen. So what took so long? With apologies, is timing just as important as wording? That brings us to this week in Greensboro, North Carolina. The City Council issued an official apology for the role police played in a massacre that left five activists dead 41 years ago. They were shot and killed by the Klan and the American Nazi Party during an anti-Klan demonstration in 1979. Many condemned the Greensboro police for not stepping in to stop the white supremacists before the attack.
Where in the heck are the cops?
They prepared for this. That's why the cops are hiding. Do you hear me? The cops are hiding because they prepared for this.
Can we help you?
You see what they
did? I see, yes. Can we help you? Can we help you?
Oh, get a doctor.
I've already called.
Help us! Help us!
Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help us! Help
Even though the wounds of that day may never heal, the city is attempting to make amends. As part of its official apology, it has dedicated an annual scholarship to 5 students in honor of each of the 5 victims.
There is nothing more clear to me than that this apology is 41 years too late.
During this week's city council meeting, council member Michelle Kennedy shared why she supports the apology.
On behalf of the 5-year-old kid that I was then, and the terror that that sparked for me, and the fear that I saw in people's faces for the first time, in ways that as a white woman I will never fully understand, I am sorry for what the city of Greensboro failed to do on that day, and for the things that we did.
This step toward reconciliation means a lot to Reverend Nelson Johnson. He was there that day 41 years ago and was injured in the shooting.
I was deeply pleased that they offered an apology of substance. That was over against several apologies that they have offered in the past, which simply said something like, "We're sorry," or "We regret that it happened."
Reverend Johnson is the co-executive director of the Beloved Community Center in Greensboro. For decades, he's been seeking justice for the people injured and killed, and has been asking for this apology for a long time. He says he's been talking with the city council for a while about what exactly an apology needs to include.
We spent some time helping them understand what an authentic apology sounds like. It has to say clearly what was done wrong. It has to say, to the best of your capacity, why did it happen? And the third thing, it has to actually begin to outline what should be done about it. We think that that actually has substance. The other is like a child, you know, so why did you break the glass? It's, oh, I'm sorry. And we thought that that was not sufficient at all to move the city forward or to move the nation forward.
You know, sometimes when people get that apology that they think they deserve or they've been waiting for, you know, it's definitely a joyous occasion. But is it joyous if you had to wait so long for it? You know, I guess that's part of what you do. You help bring people around, you know, in their spirit and their mind and help them do what's right. But, you know, me, I'm like, man, that took you a little bit too long. I don't know if I accept that apology.
Well, we think the truth matters. It matters far beyond those of us who were wounded and family members of those killed. It matters to our nation. Our nation is drifting toward massive civil strife, if not civil war. And if you love humanity, you want to do what you can to actually shed some light on the possibility of alternatives to that. It is in that spirit that we are very grateful for the apology. But we don't think it's mainly about the city council. They were the instrument through which it came. We name this as a people's apology. But one of the things that we are most proud of is that the city made the decision to have students, high school students, compete around writing narratives or doing some kind of artistic presentation on how to solve the ongoing problem of racism and poverty in Greensboro and in the United States. And the names of the 5 will be called at the largest event that the city council sponsors, which is the Martin Luther King Day breakfast. And so that's where we think that what you can do about it is correct the longstanding falsehood by building into your apology, some reflection of what the problem was that we were engaging. And that's never lost in time because, you know, we're in a bad situation now where our president is talking about, you know, stand back and stand by, you know, which is a dog whistle to the most, how can I say, white supremacist, the most dedicated white supremacist. We're in the midst of that. We don't think we had to be here if cities like Greensboro had faced the truth 40 years ago. But truth is never irrelevant. We've changed some, But we have a case here now, Marcus Dion Smith, who was pleading for help. He was a homeless man, a man without a place that he lived at regularly. So he was in the homeless shelter, had some mental issues, and they wrestled him to the ground and hogtied him on his stomach, and he suffocated. And the state's medical office ruled it a homicide. That's in front of Greensboro right now. And that's what young people are gathering around largely. And it reflects a frightening similarity to 79.
So what would be, if you had a few words of wisdom for this generation, this new generation of activists, what I see is a lot of patience and you didn't stop. I mean, how do you let these young people know that what has happened this summer across the country and the world to get what you really want is going to take more than just this summer?
Well, I think if I could put it in one word, it would be persistence. You know, some people said, I've done my part and I'm going to live the good life now. We don't quite buy that. We think that we have to persist in this struggle. This struggle is obviously linked to the very founding of the nation when human beings were dismissed. Land was stolen from Native people. Justification was created to kill them and march them through bad weather. Slavery was instituted. And we had to fight to change some of that. But the roots of that are still in this culture. And therefore, the fight is not over. Truth matters. Never give up. And don't buy into letting your hope be stolen, because hope is the final refusal to give up. As long as you have hope, and the hope has to be rooted in the potential we have as human beings. We're capable of doing better, but we have to help each other get there.
The Reverend Nelson Johnson is a co-founder and co-executive director of the Beloved Community Center in Greensboro. More in a moment.
Hey, I'm Russ Henry. I work with Leonita here at WUNC. Hope you're enjoying this episode. I'll let you get back to it, but I need just a minute to tell you about some other shows from WUNC you may like. Our politics podcast is basically required listening as we get closer and closer to the huge election day in our state. Capitol reporter Jeff Tiberi is all over the issues, the elected officials, and the news that's driving debate and policy in North Carolina. And speaking of news, the State of Things podcast features conversations with newsmakers, journalists, artists, activists, and others who are influencing the culture of North Carolina every single day. Hosts Frank Statio and Anita Rao offer a kind of up-close look at our state you won't get anywhere else. Check out the WUNC Politics podcast and the State of Things podcast right here on this app you're listening to. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of these shows.
The National Lynching Memorial in Montgomery, Alabama, documents some 4,400 lynchings, mainly in the South, between 1877 and 1950. 1950. That means there are Black folks still living today, carrying the trauma of encountering lynch mobs. There are countless lives lost to lynching we may never know about. Although there are a lot of devoted researchers and historians out there trying to piece together brutal bits of this American history. Enough of that data had presented itself in 2005 when the U.S. Senate apologized for not passing anti-lynching legislation when it had a chance to in 1950.
An apology for past crimes or the failure to deal with them means very little to me.
John Hope Franklin was not impressed. The influential historian is referred to by many as the preeminent scholar of African American history. In 2005, he recounted coming face to face with the lynch mob for NPR.
In the summer of 1934, when I was a student at Fisk University, I was employed to assist in a survey of Black cotton farmers. I encountered a group of white men in Macon, Mississippi, who seemed dissatisfied with my explanation of my presence there, and indicated to me that they could and might lynch me. The suggestion of such a dire possibility caused me to tell my supervisor that I could not remain there another hour. Since he was already packed for a hasty departure, we left in less than an hour.
In Franklin's eyes, the regularity of lynch mobs was only a sliver of the racism rampant in the United States, racism the federal government was complicit with.
African Americans and perhaps some others hovering near the lowest rung of the social and economic ladder would feel somewhat relieved if, for example, the Congress would raise the minimum wage to a point where the armed services would not appear quite so attractive to destitute young men and women. Apologies are not nearly enough for those who live in communities where every conceivable measurement of social and economic well-being continues to favor that element in society that is already the beneficiary of the largesse, the opportunities, and the other benefits that a rich and bountiful nation possesses. It would be an indication not only of fairness, but of wise statesmanship, if the Congress would use its vast powers to nudge everyone closer to the American dream of equality.
John Hope Franklin died in 2009 at the age of 94, so it's impossible to know for sure, but I wonder if he would have been pleased with something that happened this week in North Carolina. The Durham City Council voted unanimously to approve a resolution calling for federal reparations for descendants of enslaved people. It includes a universal basic income, living wage jobs for all citizens, and increasing the federal minimum wage to at least $15 per hour. The push by the city council follows a bill introduced in Congress last year for federal reparations, a bill that so far has gone nowhere. Without accountability and a plan of action to repair harm, what's an apology really worth? That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Leonida Inge. Special thanks to Naomi Prelo. Charlie Shelton Ormond is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.